Glenn Beck.
It finally happened on Friday. Impeachment hopefuls and resistance warriors like Keith Olbermann have been waiting with bated breath for months, salivating over what secrets Mike Flynn might reveal. We found out Friday. Actually, we didn't find out anything on Friday, but we found out a little, I guess, maybe. Highly anticipated ruling against General Flynn was, wait for it, lying to the FBI. The Mueller hammer everybody was waiting for on the surface seemed a little underwhelming to some. The question is, what did General Flynn promise to the FBI to receive such a small slap on the wrist? If this investigation stops here and this is all they got nothing. I don't think that's the case. After millions of dollars and thousands of man hours invested, if all we get out of this is a lying general and a tax evading lobbyist, that's a pretty big letdown. Manafort and Flynn could very well, though, be act one of a complicated three-act play. That's my guess. Who or what comes next is anyone's guess. But the hyperbolic media reports, the finger-pointing, the impeachment calls, that's not helping. And those who say, it got nothing, the president is fine, that's not helpful either. The president defeating his defense after every single allegation really isn't the smartest, Mr. President. I don't know where you, I mean, it's like your attorneys are from H&R Block. Those are tax attorneys, man. They can't help you on this. Stop listening to your really crappy attorneys. So let's get back on track. The investigation better start producing fruit soon. And we all need to look at that fruit and start accepting that fruit no matter which way it goes. Russian interference is an undisputed fact. Putin is a threat. Russia is a threat. The entire intelligence community is in agreement on this. Russian intelligence services launched a campaign to publicly sway opinion via social media. They appear to be involved in the Fusion GPS dossier and a meeting at Trump Tower. More Trump administration officials could be involved. But so can the Democrats and the Clinton campaign and a laundry list of other Americans. This is a serious issue. And if we don't fix this now, imagine what might and probably will happen during the midterms and the 2020 election. If this was just the opening salvo of a much larger Russian influence operation, we're in serious trouble. The media needs to stop with the overreaction, and so do the supporters. Those calling for impeachment every time something comes out, they need to calm down. Those who've already made up their minds that he's guilty or not guilty will ultimately find themselves missing the actual threat. So to all the investigators, the FBI, the DOJ, and all other investigations that are open on this, do your jobs. Be thorough. Do it quickly. There is too much at stake here.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I did something after I was on a holiday, and I had downloaded a whole bunch of books. And one of them, I think, was Pandemic. I think that's the first one that I read. And I've never done this. You know, at the end of the book, sometimes it says, hey, write to the author and tell me what you think. And so I did. And I just wrote, I said, hey, I just finished one of your books and I really enjoyed it. And he wrote me back right away and said, hey, thanks so much. I'd like to, you know, send you an autographed copy. And I'm like, oh, thanks. But no recognition of who I was, or I don't even know now if he really knows who I am. So I said, I'm already into the second book and it's really great. Well, probably much to his surprise, I've read all of his books, because he is looking at a problem that I am really interested in. And he has some facts that he builds his fiction. And a lot of it is, I think I would classify it, I guess, as sci-fi in a way. He builds his fiction around some facts that I want to find out more about. So I want to introduce you to A.G. Riddle. He's the author of Pandemic. Also the Atlantis gene. And I think the new one is called, what is it, AG?
It's Genome.
Genome. No. Departure. I thought that was the new one.
Well, Departure actually came out before Pandemic, so it's a standalone. But it may be the most recent book you've read. Which
okay,
is probably,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, they're all great. They're all great. So let me, first of all, thanks for coming on the program.
Oh, of course.
You really kind of look into a couple of things that interest me. You know, Stephen Hawking has said, he just said it again this weekend, that Homo sapiens are going to be a thing of the past by 2050. And people freak out and they think, oh, my gosh, we're going to be all wiped out. I don't think that's what he means. He means that Homo sapiens, as we know them, as we are now, are going to be so transformed that you won't be able to recognize the current Homo sapien next to the new Homo sapien of 2050. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I mean, I think he's right in that I believe we're in the midst of this radical transformation that we're just now getting our heads around.
So in your book, you talk about something called the Great Leap. And I was only familiar with the Great Leap Forward of China, which was a nightmare. But you talk about the Great Leap. Can you describe that?
Sure. I mean, you know, one of the interests and one of the themes of my work is, you know, humanity's genetic history. And so what we now believe is that the current, you know, that our race of humans, the Homo sapiens sapiens, are about 200,000 years old. And so when we first evolved, you know, we know there were Neanderthals existed on Earth for maybe 200,000 or 300,000 years before us. And there were, you know, these humans called Denisovans and Homo florensis on the island of Java. So there were other human species. And so we coexisted with them for about roughly 150,000 years. And it was status quo. I mean, you know, life went on Earth as it had for, you know, a very, very long time. And then something happened about 50,000 years ago. And we see it, especially in Europe, this explosion of creativity. We see these cave paintings and sort of this advent of figurative art. And so making, you know, clay sculptures and these other things. And so we also see the advent of complex language. And so these are things that really had not existed on Earth before. I mean, there were species that Homo erectus had made tools and other sort of breakthrough, you know, we had learned to control fire, but no human species had ever done anything on this level cognitively. And so we call, you know, geneticists call this the Great Leap Forward. And so the only thing that we know for a fact is that after that, all the other human species went extinct. And so I think this coincides with the extinction of other archaic humans. And so I think they're, you know, to me, it feels like we're in another great leap forward.
Okay, before we go to the other great leap forward, let me just ask one thing. Because in your books, you kind of, and I don't know what's fact and what's fiction here. You allude to the fact that the other species were kind of killed by us for competition of meat. You know, we needed 20% more calories for our brains. You know, they were bigger, stronger, but we were smarter. And so we kind of wiped them out. Is that true or is that speculation?
Well, it's still a matter of debate. I mean, what we do know for a fact is that when our species moved into an area, we see the archaeological record of other species stop. And so the big debate is, was that some sort of interbreeding with our species or was it competition? You know, Neanderthals had existed in Europe for 500,000 years. They'd seen a lot of climate change. And so a lot of, you know, anthropologists say, hey, look, you know, we think that obviously the world was getting warmer at that point, and we think that created this ecological disaster that wiped out the Neanderthals. But to me, that doesn't hold a lot of water because you got a species that's very long-lived. We show up on the scene you know, the cognitive revolution happens at the same time and these guys disappear. So,
okay. So the reason why I bring this up, and it may be where you're going, take us to the next great leap.
Well, I think, you know, to me, it's sort of like a ripple on the horizon. And, you know, in the late 90s, people said, oh, the internet is going to transform everything. You know, the retailers are going to go bust. And then it largely didn't materialize. You know, things went on the way they had for a long time. But now we're seeing this transformation of empty malls. You know, you walk into a restaurant and now there's a touch screen to take your order instead of a person. I mean, the people are still there. Assembly lines need less people. So we're seeing, you know, this, call it a technological revolution of robotics and artificial intelligence. You know, robotics are doing a lot of the manual labor that we've traditionally done for, you know, since history began. And artificial intelligence threatens to frankly do a lot of our thinking for us. So, you know, part of the thing that I explore in my books is, you know, what becomes of the human race and what does the future look like? And that's something I worry about.
Okay, so let me ask you this. As I have read yours, I'm also reading, you know, I read a lot of Ray Kurzweil, and I'm reading Brett King, his book called Augmented, which is all about, you know, what do we need to teach our children? What is on the horizon, and what do we teach our children? And one of the things that he talks about is that we have to be open-minded. We have to learn how to work with robotics and AI, and we have to really be open to accepting the changes that will be coming even to our own bodies and with nanotechnology, et cetera, et cetera. So as I'm putting all of these together and then I read your Great Leap, I think to myself, okay, so what I believe Stephen Hawking is talking about and Ray Kurzweil transhumanism. It's the singularity of bringing man and machine and making them one. If you do this and you have quantum computing and AI, an upgraded human is going to talk to a non-upgraded human, and it would be like talking to a dog. I mean, the information and the modeling that the individual could do who's upgraded that would be completely lost on a non-upgraded Homo sapien, it puts us in a different category. And so that was my first thought was, okay, this is going to put us in a different category. You're not going to be able to relate. Then I started thinking, well, we're already talking about cars. You know, once automated cars are really, everywhere, it's only a matter of time before we don't let humans drive anymore because they're going to screw it all up. Well, if you have a non-upgraded human and everybody else is upgraded, I'm not going to let the human really touch anything because it's like having your dog drive a bus. You don't do that. You can't do it. Then I read your book and I think of the Great Leap. Is it possible that the upgraded humans actually do wipe out the Homo sapien because we're dangerous to them?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think the long arc of human history has been, to a certain extent, replacement and sort of one dominant species. I mean, one of the things that fascinates me is the fact that there are no Neanderthals, but there are, you know, plenty of chimps and gorillas and bonobos. And these are, you know, obviously, whether you believe in evolution or not, you have to agree that genetically, you know, a chimpanzee is 99.8% the same genome as our species of human. And so it's like, you know, why did they survive and Neanderthals didn't? And I think it's very clear that chimpanzees were not a competitor for food with us, and to a certain extent, they weren't a threat. And so the question for me becomes, all right, if we know the future is about a certain amount of merging of human with technology, you look on the street today and everyone walking around is staring at their cell phone, half the people driving are staring at their cell phone, and so it's, whether it's been implanted or not, there is this sort of merging with technology that we know is somewhat inevitable. What does become the role for humans. And I do think there will be this, probably a minority of people that say, you know, I like life the way it is, and I'm not going to join this sort of future that humanity at large has envisioned. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I like to think that there's going to be coexistence and peace, but you know, the long arc of human history hasn't really borne that out. But yeah. So we may be entering this new era.
A.G. Riddle, author of Genome, also that's a part of the Pandemic series, the Atlantis Plague, and Departure. You can start really anywhere and pick them up and enjoy them. Great storytelling, really, really great storytelling. I really enjoyed it. A.G., I'd love to talk to you again sometime. Thank you so much for all of your hard work.
Oh, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Bye-bye. Name of the book, again, is Genome. It's part of the Pandemic series. I started with Pandemic, then went to Genome. I just read Departure, which he said was an earlier book, which I thought was really, really good, but doesn't have kind of some of the deeper stuff in it about the Great Leap. I mean, if you're at all curious about what the future holds, and where do we come from, and what's the next turn? He gives you some food for thought. It's all sci-fi, obviously, but it's quite good. A.G. Riddle is his name.
Glenn Beck.
Stu and I are just having an interesting conversation off the air about, you know, why does this stuff matter?
Yeah, like, even if you figure out exactly what's going to happen in the future and think of some magical way to stop it or make it better, I mean, then you're probably going to be dead in like 3 days anyway. And no one's even going to know.
That's a very optimistic.
No, I'm.
Yeah. So, I mean, because I'm really concerned about technology. I'm both thrilled and excited about technology and very concerned because we're not thinking about the ethics that are coming our way. We're all distracted, and it's just going to come barreling down on us. Our education system is not prepared to teach us what we need to learn. It's teaching us to live in a world of 1940. And what's coming is robotics and artificial intelligence and a completely different way of life. So, A, you're not going to stop it. None of us is going to be stopped. The genie's out of the bottle, so it's not stoppable. However, how do you live with it? Now, how do you prevent, you know, how do you warn about things that are really bad? How do you decide and prepare yourself before it's just here, so you're strong enough to not just fall in line with things that are maybe moving in the wrong direction? How do you teach your children to be prepared for the world of tomorrow? What should they even be doing? Go to college? Study what?
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's a really big week in the court system. Tomorrow... Donald Trump is going to court to try to fight a lawsuit. Remember the woman who was on The Apprentice, was a huge fan. Then she was out in California. He called her up and said, hey, why don't you come to my place at the peninsula and we'll talk. She went. She said that she was, you know, abused by him, and it was horrible because she was such a big fan. He called her a liar. She's now suing for defamation of character. And she said, I wasn't lying, and don't call me a liar. Now, the White House tomorrow is going to be in court arguing that the president can't do depositions while he's the president because it will distract him from his other duties, et cetera, et cetera. It's not going to fly because it didn't fly with Bill Clinton. So if that happens, that's a big deal because it's going to open up an entirely new front on the president. And it will be I think that will be the story of 2018 for Donald Trump, that and Russia. But this one will probably be a a faster knife. The other thing that is happening tomorrow in the court system is we're going to hear the gay wedding cake. The Supreme Court is going to hear this case. Welcome to the program, Pat Gray.
Thank you. This is the one from Colorado where a gay couple came in and they asked this man, Mr. Phillips, for a wedding cake. And right away he said, you know, I'll bake anything for you. You can have brownies, pies. I'll sell you whatever you want. But I just can't be part of your wedding. That's my art. And it's a real personal thing for me. And I just feel like it violates my religious rights. And so they took him to court and they sued him. And of course, Colorado decided that if he doesn't do cakes for gay weddings, he can't do any cakes at all. That was their ruling. So he's taking it all the way to the Supreme Court.
Crazy.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. It's unbelievable because, you know, obviously he's claiming First Amendment, freedom of speech, and religious freedom, both First Amendment issues. And so does that trump this equality thing? Do you have to participate in somebody's wedding if they ask you to? It seems so bizarre, and we've talked about this a million times. Why would you want that? If you're a gay couple and a guy doesn't want to be a part of your wedding, why would you want him to be? Doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't. And they're sort of arguing this on the basis of he's an artist.
Yes.
With his bakery.
It means a lot.
It's an art gallery of cakes, basically. Yes. And yeah. It's my artistic expression.
My dad, made cakes for a living. He was a baker. And
stunning development. No one could have guessed that.
From looking at me. And his specialty were wedding cakes. And he was an artist. He was absolutely an artist. It is an art form.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he says. And because they said, well, just because you make him a wedding cake, that doesn't mean you're participating in the wedding. So that doesn't constitute religious freedom. And then he brought in this artistic part of it. And so that's what the Supreme Court will hear tomorrow, whether or not he has the right to not participate in their wedding. And I'm guessing the Supreme Court's going to decide he has to participate in their wedding.
That's amazing. They're saying that this is basically already 4-4.
That's huge.
Right? It's 4-4.
Yeah, it's 4-4 from the beginning. And then you've got Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah.
Who always decides on behalf of gay rights.
Although he has decided on the side of religious freedom a couple times as well.
And not against gay rights, right?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see which one wins out with him.
Yeah, interesting.
What are the ramifications of this? If the Supreme Court says, how far can they take this now?
It means, from what I understand, the legal world is saying that you will have to kiss men
whenever,
at any point, you're requested.
Really?
No, yeah, you cannot not say you do not want to participate in that. Because
I thought it was bigger than that. I thought we all had to be gay after this
all
ruling.
The time?
Yeah,
okay,
all the time.
I thought it was
you guys are probably the wrong people to ask.
Probably true.
No, but I mean, if you're saying now that this is an art form, and it is, mm-hmm. and I'm spending my time, and I will make you anything. I just cannot make you something because of my religious belief. Mm-hmm. I can't put my hard-earned time and artwork towards your wedding. Well, then that's everything. That's everything.
Yeah,
you have no right to your religious freedom. As practiced outside of the church, you have this is a really good move by FDR. You have the freedom to worship. You worship any way you want in your church. Worship any way you want. Once you're outside, no.
Yeah,
no. You can worship in your house. Mm-hmm. We can't even really do that now. But once you're outside, then that's different.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really mean anything. If I can't apply what I believe. I mean, this is the problem honestly, this is why the Amish get away with it, okay? Because they mean it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're not playing some, we're also, pious, and then at night they're, whipping out their LED screens and watching movies. They're not doing it. We're Christians, we say one thing, but we live a different way. And so nobody, I don't believe you actually believe that stuff. We're the Amish, mm-hmm. It's, you're dressing like that. You're still in the barn shoveling crap. You've never seen a cell phone. I think you believe it.
Yeah.
I think you believe it.
Well, I mean, you'd think for sure you'd believe that the baker actually believes, has convictions here. He's being offered money. It's the way he makes a living, right? And he's turning down money to make this stance.
And especially when he'll bake them anything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like he's denying them service because they're gay. It's just that he doesn't want to participate in that particular ceremony.
See, here's the problem. We need each other. We need each other. And I don't want to live in a world where everybody is exactly the same. We need the pushback. It's the only way we grow. And as long as your pushback is not evil, if this guy was like, you get them gays out of my bakery, well, you're just a bigoted guy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, you're welcome here anytime, I love you. And you can have anything. I can't cross this line because of my belief. That's when we all need to say, okay. You know, if I said, hey, I want you to come and participate in, you know, this particular thing. And for instance, I asked a rabbi to come speak at our church. Hey, would you come speak at his church? He says, no, I can't. I can't. Why? Rabbis are not allowed to walk into churches. You're just not allowed. You're a rabbi. You don't walk into a church. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Now, does that make him bigoted? No. It just means that's his religious belief that we as a rabbi are not supposed to go into houses of worship of other people's faith. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make him a bigot. I can live side by side with him. We're fine. That's just his belief. My belief is different. To force what I want, would I want to live in a world where I could force the rabbi? No. I'm sorry, Rabbi, you won't be able to practice any of your religious stuff unless you come right now and speak at my church. No, it's against my religious belief. I don't care. You're a bigot. I don't want to live in a world that is forcing him to go and break his religious belief. Unless he's outside all the time going, you know, these Christians all need to be rounded up. No, thank you. That's a different thing. But we all have our religious belief, and no matter what it is, Penn Jillette, I don't agree with his belief in religion. He doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe in God. I don't believe that. I don't want to shut him up. I don't want to change his lifestyle. I like him. He's a nice guy. He's not doing me any harm. Let him go. If I said, hey, I wanted you to come to, you know, my wedding. Now, he would, but let's just say he was one of these hardcore atheists. It's like, I'm not going to church. Okay, cool. That's fine. I don't agree with it, but okay. Doesn't change me, doesn't change him. It's just he doesn't want to go to a church because he doesn't believe in God. Okay.
Yeah. Well, the question a lot of people have asked is, would a Jewish baker have to make a cake for a Nazi? Are we getting to that point where you're going to be forced into doing all of those things?
But see, what they'll say to you is, oh, come on. That's just not going to happen. No, that's not going to happen. Well, no, but you're setting the precedent that it has to happen.
Yeah. Well, saying if it's not, because their defense is that a baker that supported same-sex marriage could refuse to bake a cake opposing it, right? And that's obviously true. Their defense that as well. That's not a case of sexual discrimination, though. That's not a case of, that's just a political statement case. Like the Nazi, the Jewish Nazi thing, they could say.
Okay, so, all right. So Corrie Ten Boom, you know who she is. She actually, to save Jews, she's a Christian. She actually went to, what is it, Ravensbrück. And she and her sister died in Ravensbrück. And she went with the Jews to the concentration camps. A remarkable woman. She gets out and she goes on a tour of saying love and forgiveness. Now she's going all over Europe, love and forgiveness. We have to love the people that we think we despise, that hated us. Love, 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 love. That's the answer. So she goes into a church in Munich and she said she felt her real first big test. She goes into this church in Munich and she starts to give her speech on love, and she looks down and she sees the guy that was in charge of the shower room when her and her sister came in. He was the main guard and was in charge of all of the mocking and all of the things. Can you imagine what happened in shower rooms? All of the things that the guards were doing in the shower rooms, he was the guy in charge, and she was preaching love. And he comes up to her afterwards, and he said, I am glad to know that there's forgiveness even for people like me. Thank you. And he puts his hand out, and she said, I couldn't shake his hand. I couldn't. She said, everything in me, I could not do it. I couldn't. And she said, I immediately closed my eyes and started prayer. Lord, help me here, because I have no love for this man. I cannot find a love. Help me. She said, she opens her eyes, and he's standing there, and she's like, I could not. She said, it was like my arm was tied down. I could not move it. She said, I closed my eyes again. Lord, help me here, because I can't find the love for him. She said, I opened my eyes a second time. She said, my arm started going up. She said, when I grasped his hand, she said, that is when I just felt the power, God's power, of giving me the love for him. She said, but I had to start moving my hand first. I have no idea why I'm telling you this story now, but I know it ties in to what we were talking about.
Wow. Okay. That was awesome. It's powerful.
Isn't that a Corrie Ten Boom say that? Is that a quote from her?
That's a quote. She was starting to lose it there at the end.
All right.
So I think the point is that this is who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be able to, no matter what, we need each other. We got to love each other. But we don't have to force it down each other's throat. Otherwise, it does lead to the showers. That kind of stuff leads to the showers. One side says they're right. The other side says, no, I'm right. Whichever one has the power, if you don't agree to disagree, then you have to round people up. We kind of love each other and recognize that we have to coexist.
It always ends with a bullet to the head. I think we've said that before, haven't we? That's where it always ends.
It always does.
It always ends. Yeah.
Okay, well, so we're looking forward to a really great court case tomorrow with a bullet to the head of the baker.
Also, a very upbeat Pat Gray Unleashed is certainly around the corner.
Pat, what are you leading with?
Entertaining version of what we just talked about. So that's coming up.
No Corrie Ten Boom 12-minute.
No, sorry about
dissertation
that.
On handshaking.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck.
So if you thought I'll never see an election with a game show host, a socialist who's about 1,000 years old, and Randy Quaid, you may be mistaken. More on that on tomorrow's broadcast.
Glenn Beck.